TSN 1200.
Wow, what a game and what a start to the Stanley Cup playoffs. Welcome back, everybody, or welcome to the show, 8:13 here on this Monday morning. Hope you had a nice weekend. We had great weather, and we've got a terrific week ahead of us, it looks like, as well, as we head toward the long May 2-4 weekend. J.R. Simmer and Hammer with you to be joined in mere moments by Pierre McGuire. And you heard highlights from yesterday, including a pair of overtime goals and the late winner from Braden Point in Tampa's win over Florida. And, of course, Saturday night, it all kicked off with Washington beating Boston in overtime. And how about Craig Anderson coming off the bench, well-rested, as he said, very well-rested, and backstopped the Capitals to that Game 1 win. And it looks like we'll see Craig Anderson tonight for Game 2 in that series.
Yeah, and JR, a guy that came in on a professional tryout, four games all season, and boy, he's been a great playoff goaltender. So, no, didn't expect him to play, and a real nice storyline from Saturday's win.
Pierre McGuire was in Vegas yesterday to watch the Minnesota Wild pull the upset with an OT win over the Vegas Golden Knights. He has returned home and joins us now, as he does each and every weekday morning at this time. A presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How you doing this morning, Pierre?
Very well, JR. Good morning to you. Hello, Sean.
Good morning, Pierre.
All right, Pierre, let's start with your game, because you were right there with, what, 9,000 fans in Vegas yesterday?
Baloney, way more than that.
Oh, they're not keeping track, or what?
I have no idea, but if that was only 9,000 people, then I know a lot of teams in the National Hockey League like to have that 9,000.
Yeah, that was a loud crowd, to be sure. It came right through my television. Oh. And so Cam Talbot, 42 saves, and an early OT goal from Joel Eriksson Ek. Tell us about how the Wild were able to pull off the upset.
Cam Talbot was really good in the first period, 19 shots he faced, and he was stellar in a lot of those saves. It was a great goalie battle. It was a great physical battle. Minnesota's had their number all year. They played eight times this year. Minnesota won five, lost one in regulation, and lost two in shootout end or extra time. So you look at it, Minnesota's had their number all year. They've all been tight games. The biggest thing I see with Minnesota under Dean Evason, they're not afraid to play a matchup game. They're really structured in their own zone, and they play hard. When they get a chance to forecheck, they play hard. There are two things they're going to have to do if they're going to win this series. They're going to have to be much better in faceoffs. They were not particularly good in faceoffs yesterday, and it really cost them. In fact, Golden Knights won 62% of the draws. And the other thing is they're going to have to get their forecheck much more consistent. If they do those two things, they got a legitimate chance to pull an upset.
Pierre, shots on goal certainly favored Vegas. My highlight package had mostly Marc-Andre Fleury. On quality of chances, was it even, or would you actually favor Minnesota?
Well, Minnesota might have had the more quality chances, especially at different times. Ryan Hartman had probably the game of his life. I mean, he had no points in the game, but he had five shots on net, and he was hitting everything that moved, and I mean, he just played a fantastic game. He really did. He just couldn't get the puck to go. He's one guy that played tremendously well and with consistency. Kaprizov, I think, can be a lot better. He had one glorious chance in the third period. Marc-Andre Fleury shut the door on him pretty well with a spectacular save moving from his left to his right. But, you know, Sean, the biggest thing is, again, if Minnesota's got to do two things better. And if they do, they've got a legitimate chance to win, and that is be better in faceoff situations and be much harder on the forecheck.
No Max Pacioretty for Vegas. That doesn't help, because he had a terrific year. But we saw this from Vegas. And again, it's the first game. I don't want to overread into it, but we saw this from Vegas last year in the playoffs, Pierre, where a ton of shots, ton of zone play, and not a lot of goals at the end of the day. And that was the template for Game 1 yesterday. Same idea, 42 shots and no goals. Should there be concern about their ability to put the puck in the net?
Well, I think I want to be fair when I judge them. I want to see their whole lineup. You know, Pacioretty, when healthy, they were 0-for-3 in the power play yesterday and really didn't create a lot on it. When he's on there, it makes a difference. The one thing that I think drives a lot of offense in the playoffs, and you can see it with the Islanders, you can see it with Pittsburgh, you see it with Boston, you see it with Washington, you definitely saw it with Tampa last night, and Florida even. You have to have center ice thrust. And if you look at, and I say this with all due respect, because I think Vegas has a really good team, but if you look at it, Chandler Stephenson's not a number one center. You know, Keegan Kolesar is not a number two or number three center. William Karlsson is not a number one center. So they're doing it by committee down the middle. Nick Roy, depending on how you want to pronounce it, where he is, he's not a number one. So, again, I think a lot of what ails Vegas offensively might be lack of thrust through the middle. But I still think there's a long way to go in this series, a very long way to go.
Yeah, I know Vegas only lost 1-0, Pierre, but would you say historically, whether it's the start of a series, end of a series, suddenly fans back in the building, that teams that come out, especially at home like Vegas, you almost empty the tank in that first period, and traditionally, do you see a lot of them level off and most times end up losing hockey games where that first period, it's like I said, you've just emptied your tanks?
Yeah, I don't know about that one yesterday because I thought Vegas was really consistent the whole way through. I mean, again, Cam Talbot, the thing that he did probably better than I thought he could do is control his rebounds and not give up. Usually Vegas, because they're so big and they go to the net so hard, they create a lot of second and third chances because they forced the goalie into giving up rebounds. They weren't able to do that with Cam Talbot yesterday. So I think that's something that they're going to have to do a better job of. Talking to Vegas, is they're going to have to do a better job of creating more second and third chances. But I thought that they were pretty darn consistent. I thought those were two good teams yesterday, two very well-coached teams, two teams that really knew what they had to do to win.
Four games, four one-goal games. At no point in any of the four games was there ever a two-goal lead for any team. That goes to show you how these playoffs have kicked off and been very, very close. Tampa, Florida, I mean, can they give us seven games of that, Pierre? Is that possible?
No, probably not. They're going to try, but the physicality will break them down. I watched the whole game when I got back to my room before I had to go to the airport yesterday, and the physicality, is going to wear out a bunch of guys, but that's where I think it probably favors Tampa because they've been through it. And you could see when they fell behind in that game yesterday, after Owen Tippett's goal, you could see this is time to amp it up, and they did. And the power play goal by Point, what a play by Kucherov. Mm-hmm. If you haven't watched it, go watch it. It's spectacular. And then Point's goal, the game-winning goal, a shot blocked by McDonough, and then the stretch pass by McDonough, and Braden Point's in all alone, and there's nothing Bobrovsky can do there. But what I would say is that I think the difference, if it keeps going like this, will be the overall depth with guys like Blake Coleman, guys like Anthony Cirelli, guys like Yanni Gord, guys like Ross Colton, Patrick Maroon, Matthew Joseph, those Alex Killorn, just going off the top of my head. You know, there was no Barkley Goodrow yesterday, and so they need that player. But I would just say that, you know, you look at it there, Tampa's tough to play against. Boy, they're tough.
Tampa goes 3-for-4 on the power play. The obvious is, well, stay out of the box, but you're going to have some calls. Anything, any critique on the PK for Florida yesterday?
No, because I say this all the time because I do a lot of Tampa games. When you got Hedman up high running it, or Sergachev, either, or then you have Stamkos, who's a righty on the left-hand shot or left-hand side, and you got Kucherov, who's a left-hand shot on the right-hand side, and you're jamming the net. It doesn't matter who's down low. It could be Killorn, could be Maroon, could be Matthew. It's almost impossible to defend. You saw it. The Kucherov can shoot it. Kucherov can fake the shot and move it to the middle, to the bumper, to Braden Point. Or Kucherov can go back door and move it, basically cross box over to Stamkos, and it's a one-timer. So there are one-timers available everywhere. There's creativity available everywhere. It's almost an impossible power play to defend.
Braden Point's breakaway winner was world-class, but on the whole, still five goals on Bobrovsky. They have options. What do you think Florida will do in net for game two?
I wish I knew. I wish I could tell you. I don't
know. What would
you
do? What would you do, though? Would you bounce back with them?
Honestly, you want to know what I'd do?
Yeah.
Spencer Knight.
Yeah? Even I had a Driedger who had a great year.
Yes.
Is it what, the unknown or what?
Well, that's part of it. And the other part is I think it gives the team a surge. I just think they know this kid's going to be their goalie long term. I'm not afraid of that. I know a lot of people are saying, what are you, crazy? I've been telling you all, what is he, 4-0? I mean, he hadn't even scratched the surface. That's what I do. But they'll probably go with Driedger. I don't know, I would imagine.
Great year for the Panthers, but for people that watched, like myself yesterday, a bit of a awakening or coming out party as to how good this hockey team was. I mean, hey, they pushed pace almost the whole night.
Oh, no, they're a good team. And Joel's a good coach, as you know. Yeah. Joel Quenneville's a really good coach. And he's instituted some philosophies there that I think are really going to play well for them long term. But the acquisition of Sam, the team's just become harder to play against. Sam Bennett's a hard player to play against. Mason Marchment's a hard player to play against. Carter Verhaeghe, Noel Acciari. I mean, you go down there, Mike Hornquist. They got guys that are Lomberg. They're hard guys to play against. And Gudas is not a nice guy in the back end. He's a nasty piece of business. Uyghur's a tough kid. I mean, they got grit, and they're doing this without one of the top defensemen in the league. So, again, you look at it. what's going on there. Their future is amazingly bright. It really is.
Game one yesterday, the tripleheader was the Islanders and the Penguins, and New York wins in overtime. I thought, quite frankly, Pierre, I thought all four of the goals were not great. You know,
stinky.
Are there options for Pittsburgh?
Or, yeah. They know something that maybe the rest of the league should have been finding out.
Is there an option for Pittsburgh, or do they got to roll back with Jerry for game two?
I mean, they could go to Casey DeSmith, I guess, but I think they're probably going to run back with Jerry just based on the way it sounded from Mike Sullivan. But you never know. I just, again, you just don't know. The one thing I'd say is for Tristan, you can't get beat short side with regularity, and you can't get beat high glove with regularity. It just, that can't happen in the league. You watch Fleury yesterday. Every single time they try to go high glove on him, he just ripped it out of the air. He didn't just catch it. He ripped it out of the air. I mean, that's a guy that's confident. He's square. He knows exactly. He's baiting guys. He wants them to shoot there. It's almost with Jerry. He's like, please don't shoot there. I'm not sure I'm going to catch it.
You made room for Murray, and you got rid of Fleury. Murray is now gone. Jerry's in there. You talk about it, the highlight pack yesterday. Still fire up the fan base that Marc-Andre Fleury was ever moved from Pittsburgh?
I would imagine, but again, the general manager that did that is no longer there, so you can't blame Hextall and Burke. But I would say that, you know, they probably had second thoughts about it right after it happened. You see the popularity of Marc-Andre, the fact he took them, you know, Vegas right to the Stanley Cup final against Washington in their first year is unbelievable, and he earned every part of that. He did. He was a major. I did so many of their games that year. He was a major part of it, and he's got plenty of game left. He's not going. You see that one save that he made in the third period against Kaprizov. I mean, I don't know how he's at his age is able to be that flexible and that quick and that dynamic. That's after all these years, that's pretty amazing.
The Pittsburgh Penguins are now 1-11 in their last 12 playoff games, which is hard to comprehend when you're talking about having one of the greatest players ever, Sidney Crosby, playing on your team. Evgeny Malkin didn't play yesterday. Again, I don't know what his prognosis is for the series, but if he can't go, can they win without Evgeny Malkin?
They can. It's not going to be easy. One of the things that has to happen is they've got to get, you know, Bluger. It was great for them to get Tanev back. Brandon Tanev makes a difference. He had 9 hits in that game yesterday. I was studying the sheets last night on the plane. He had 9 hits in that game. So he's an important player in playoff hockey. Kapanen had a goal, which is really important. They got to get Rust and Gensel going offensively. Crosby played, I thought, a really good solid game yesterday. Played almost 26 minutes, if I remember correctly, in that game. So they can do it. They definitely can. They got to get better goaltending. I mean, yesterday, that could have gone either way. If the goaltender had been a little bit better for Pittsburgh, they probably would have won the game.
Cody Ceci, 26 minutes, plus one.
Well.
Yeah, regular season, Pierre, 17 points in 53 games, a plus 18, playing about 18 minutes. Did get out of Toronto and Ottawa and finding a home there. Has he settled in at 25 years old into a pretty good spot?
They simplified everything for him. I think Todd Reardon, the goalie, the assistant coach that runs the defense, has done a really good job there. They've got good mobility around him. He doesn't have to produce points. He just has to stay back, block shots, be a solid defensive defenseman. He's doing that. You know, I think that they play such a good puck possession game more times than not, so they're not defending as much as they are attacking, which is good. He had a very good year. Again, I did a plethora of Penguins games, and I thought Cody was very good.
27 years old, sorry.
Craig Anderson comes out of mothballs pretty much. And
That's a hard deal, by
the way. Yeah, exactly. Played 4 games. As he said, he was well-rested. Played only 4 games all season, and there he is, front and center. The Craig Anderson we saw in the playoffs a lot for Ottawa over the last 10 years, just real solid, made the saves when necessary. Again, how tough is it going to be for him, Pierre, having not played a lot, if he ends up having to play at least some, if not a lot, of this series?
I think he should be okay as long as his conditioning levels are good. I wouldn't be so concerned about the Washington Capitals goaltending. I'd be more concerned about the Boston Bruins. And if they're not getting play from Taylor Hall and from David Krejci and from Craig Smith, all those guys were -2 in that game, and I watched it just like you guys watched it. If those guys aren't producing offensively and they're liabilities defensively, which they were and they were not producing offensively and they were liabilities defensively, that's a major problem for Boston. It's a major, major issue. The reason why they went on that roll at the end of the year is because Taylor Hall, David Krejci, and Craig Smith lit it up, and it took so much pressure off of Bergeron, Pasternak, and Marchand. And if those guys can't get it done, the second line there, this is going to be a very difficult series for Boston to win.
I know it was a short overtime, but shots were 32-26. To me, for Boston, only be limited to 26. Does that type of series favor Washington? And I would assume that certainly works for a 40-year-old Craig Anderson.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly my point. Yeah. I just totally agree with you. So, and you know that Ovechkin will get better as the series goes along. You just know he will. Again, here's the one thing about Washington that doesn't get enough credit. You've got Nick Backstrom, who's obviously tremendous. You've got Lars Eller, who's been very, very good for them for a long period of time. And Nick Dowd plays on a line with Carl Hagelin and Garnet Hathaway, and they cause so much trouble for the opposition. And the Bruins need to match that. And if they can't, I think that's going to be another piece of, you know, problem for the Boston Bruins. So, yeah, no, this is going to be a tough series if that second line for Boston can't get going.
Based on practice, it looks like Jesperi Kotkaniemi and Cole Caulfield will start as scratches in Game 1 for Montreal. What do you make of the decision on having both of them out?
They know their team better than I. I'm going to say it that way. I'm going to try to be diplomatic about it. They have to hope that, Jesperi didn't finish the season very well. I think everybody knows that. Caulfield, their defensive flaws in his game, there's no question about it. Their issues in his own zone on breakouts, I get that. You know, everybody that watches sees that. But they don't have a lot of guys that can find the back of the net as easily as he can. You give him three chances, one of those pucks is going in. He doesn't need four. He just needs three. And so maybe two of those three are going in. But I don't know. I mean, again, they know their team better than I. This is not going to be an easy series for Montreal.
Look like a lineup that Ducharme is building for a road almost survive in Toronto for games one and two?
It could be. I mean, again, you were going to see early on the one thing that I think for them, if they don't have a plan for Austin Matthews and Mitchell Marner, then they're going to have a problem. And the one thing, again, with Toronto is they've added so much grit and veteran presence that they're not going to, one, things go bad now. They're not going to go in full panic mode. If things go bad, they won't go in full panic mode for sure. Not saying they will, but if things do. And usually there's little stretches over every game in a playoff series where something goes wrong and you got to just get your composure back pretty quick.
Montreal announced last night, I don't know if you heard this news or not, that Carey Price and Brendan Gallagher are going to play down in Laval tonight. Price is going to play half the game. Anytime you do that, there is the risk of injury. But do you think that's worth the risk for Montreal? Would you have done that?
I understand what they're doing with Carey. I don't think it's that big a risk. With Brendan, I don't know. Maybe Brendan said to them, I need to play a game before I can play in the NHL in a playoff series. He would know his body better than anybody else, but I think for Carey, it's not a bad thing, unless, you know, again, the concussion's a problem for him. But I can't imagine the doctors there. Dr. Mulder is so protective of the players in Montreal. I can't imagine that they would just allow him to go play if he wasn't fully healthy.
Yeah, I look at the Gallagher injury, and I think he'll be fine. But to your point on Carey Price, do you think this is still very much a test where if you start him in game one, Pierre, and he's not good to go, very deflating for a hockey team. So do you think this is a possibility that maybe he's still not out of the woods? Because if not, I think you'd play him a full game versus a half game. So are they still a little bit leery of the concussion?
Yeah, I don't know the issue. Yeah, I don't even want to speculate on injury situations. All I know is I know the medical people there, Graham Reinben and Dr. Mulder, really well, and they're very professional people. And I just can't see them putting a player in harm's way.
Yeah.
All right, lastly here in Ottawa, since the last time we talked to you, Pierre Dorion met with the media and announced that Artem Zub was signed to a two-year contract up here worth $2.5 million per season. The two-year deal means he goes right to unrestricted free agency when it's done. We had a healthy and lively debate about that earlier this morning. What are your thoughts on the term of the deal? Do you think they should have gone longer with him, or do you think 2 years is the right amount?
I think it's probably a good period for them. They've got defensemen filtering through their organization right now. I think they probably want to, you know, see where those guys end up. Zub's a player that had, I thought, a really solid year for that team. There are hiccups, obviously, with every player, and in 2 years he'll be, 27, 28 years of age. So, again, you know, not in the younger part of his career, not in the old part of his career, probably the middle of his career. But I just think that it's probably the most prudent. I don't see that being a big issue.
Yeah, and I'm not a fan of it, Pierre, but part of that point, hey, if you can't, the player doesn't want to sign for more 2 years. We debated that part of it. This rationale, though, and this has nothing to do with our debate, but what Pierre Dorion said is, well, we have other players coming. Yeah. We've continued to talk about that they need to add another top four defenseman. To me, I lock this guy down as a top four guy. I don't understand that rationale that in 2 years when you become a good hockey team, that a guy that came in and played outstanding hockey for you, that this is favorable, that he's going to be an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, maybe they have other plans. Maybe they're looking at acquiring somebody else, you know.
That can't be realistic, though. I know what you're saying.
Trades happen all the time.
A top four defenseman that you're going to make that contract at the end of the season based on you've got something else going on. I mean, the rationale Pierre Dorion uses is that they've got Thompson and JBD, and I just didn't think that was a great way to frame it, that this idea, okay, he's okay for 2 years because now we have so many guys coming that are going to take his job. That was more my point.
Yeah, I think, well, no, there's nothing wrong with having that take. The big thing to me is I don't know, again, what the budget he has to work with. I don't know long-term what he's being told. So, I think to prejudge him would be to be unfair, I think.
All right, so what is your, you know you're out in Vegas, now you're back home.
Colorado, St. Louis tonight, into Pittsburgh tomorrow for Pittsburgh and Islanders, back for Colorado, St. Louis on Wednesday, Islanders, Pittsburgh on Long Island on Thursday, Colorado, St. Louis Friday, and then into Minnesota for game 4, Minnesota, Vegas.
Okay, all right, so you got games every single night this week?
Every night, yeah.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. All right, sounds terrific. Well, it's the best time of year to be in it, and we've got 4 great games to start it off. Hopefully it continues. Thanks for the time, as always.
Awesome.
And grab a good nap today. You got a big game tonight, and we'll look forward to chatting with you again tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, Jared. Thanks a lot, Sean. Have a great day, everybody.
You will have coverage of the World Hockey Championship starting this Friday, Canada-Latvia. And if you missed the news, also announced on the weekend, Jacob Bernard-Docker was added to Team Canada as well. Unfortunately, it comes at the expense of another Ottawa native, Kevin Ball, who the 67s, who, of course, joined the Devils late in the season. He was announced to be a member of Team Canada. Unfortunately, he suffered an injury. So Jacob Bernard-Docker got the late call. So it'll be JBD, Nick Paul, and Connor Brown, all representing Canada at the World starting on Friday.
Yeah, and disappointing with Jake Sanderson, JR. But in the case of JBD, gosh, one of the opening games, I think I was off, I watched, and I was kind of like, ugh. And then I realized the kids had a bunch of time off. Man, oh, man, he just got better with each game. I know Mark Mathot, who knows defensemen, knows how to defend, just glowing about his play, kind of going into next year. And I just think this is really cool. I mean, you look at the short and college season, you look at time here to head to the World Championship and get that experience should set him up for a nice summer and a nice training camp. So great news for the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, and of course, Artem Zub will represent to Team Russia. So 4 Ottawa Senators playing in the World Championships. And again, our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question. Do you agree with signing Artem Zub to just a 2-year contract? Yes, perfect length. No, should be longer, and right now it's sitting at, with well over 700 votes already this morning, we're at about 60-40, yes.
Yeah.
Right now. So keep the votes coming at tsn1200.ca.
Yeah, and lots of moving parts. And as you said, always a very healthy debate. And the debate we had, JR, to take people very sincerely into a war room, I mean, that's exactly what you're doing when you're sitting as a staff and trying to make decisions on qualifying offers, contracts, where guys fit in. Lots of fun in there to be discussing kind of the backs and forths. And hey, so many moving parts, not to mention what the hell does a player want to end up doing at the end of the day?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, more on that coming up. And we'll get into more what Pierre Dorion had to say coming up after 9 o'clock, including his thoughts on extending some of the players beyond the Brady Tkachuk and Drake Bathursons, who are the two most high-profile restricted free agents coming up for the Sens. So some of that coming up after 9 o'clock this morning. Mm-hmm. I wanted to bring everybody up to date. Of course, the Red Blacks still waiting official word on when the CFL season hopefully we'll get underway, but this news just coming from 3 Down Nation, which does a great job of covering the Canadian Football League. Jalen Saunders is a free agent receiver that was signed by the Red Blacks, has a history in the CFL with Hamilton, real good player, was and hopefully is going to be a key player, but he was in a what looks to be a very serious car accident on the weekend. Mm-hmm. He's tweeted out some pictures from his Instagram and some pictures from his car and the car that he appears to have hit, and it looks like a head-on collision. Yeah. Man, the damage is like those two cars look, you know, I'm no expert, but I think they're totaled.
Oh, okay.
And he's in the hospital with some significant injuries. He didn't go into detail
on his own Instagram. Just said, quote, be strong and courageous. Don't be afraid. Don't be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. Says hashtag thank you.
Yeah.
So thankful to be alive, it sounds like, after. And I'm not even exactly sure where he's from. State that in there. But, boy, those pictures from the accident, that was a – he's lucky to be alive.
Yeah, most recently we saw Tiger Woods. And, boy, amazing, JR. First of all, recovery. But old Tiger, lots of cash in the account. The question is, walking around, man, you see an athlete like that and the understanding of you're your own business, right? Your body. You've probably gone a full year and more without a paycheck. You've got an opportunity to come here, and hey, this isn't like they're sitting there and they're going to be sending you money. I don't know how it works in the CFL, but I'm guessing if you can't show up for training camp, you probably don't get on to payroll. So man, oh man, hate to see that happen for guys, and certainly for guys that have gone through what the CFL has done and probably needs the cash at this point, but hopefully can get healthy and can return.
I know that it's all things playoffs for people this time of year, and got the NBA playoffs, of course, starting this week. Friday was a down night, so we watched. There's a new movie out on Netflix called The Woman in the Window.
Well, I saw your rating. I said to Mira, JR's Rotten Tomato was not very strong.
No, that was a very...
The cast looks decent,
Amy
though.
Adams is a very good actress. Actor, and there's a couple other people who I'm not good with names. I just, you know, recognizability is what I look at. So, and my daughter read the book, and she said the book was excellent. She read the book last year, and it was interesting. The Washington Post wrote an article about how difficult it was to actually bring this this movie to. Well, at one point, it was going to be out in the theaters, and then Disney was involved. Disney had the rights to it, and then they gave up on it. And Netflix bought it from them. So this was a straight-to-Netflix movie. And it's, it's not very good.
Yeah.
Gary Oldman, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Julianne Moore. That's a good cast right there.
It's a very good cast. The problem isn't the acting. The problem is the story.
The transition.
The story is very difficult.
Yeah.
And the guy who did the screenplay or adapted the book or whatever, he talked about, this was a really good I retweeted the Washington Post article. He talked about how difficult, it was just a difficult story, and okay. I want to give it away.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not one, Mark Mathot said he gave up on it. It wasn't bad. Okay. It wasn't bad enough for me that I gave up on it.
Okay.
But three quarters of the way through the movie, there's a real good twist.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's just really kind of dumb.
Yeah, and dumb. Funny.
Save
and
your time.
This is where we're at, I guess, in discussing. Mir and I on Friday night started into, I said, good news. First Blood is on TV. So
Rambo. How did you sell her on Rambo?
Well, it was not a good idea on my part. She labored through the entire thing. Also gave me background on how ridiculous everything was that was going on, how bad the acting was, how the timeline. If that wasn't enough, I decided to go into Rambo 2. And if you remember his counterpart, female, who he falls in love with for about 5 minutes and then she's killed, we ended up trying to do that. It was almost comedic and looking. I'm saying, well, it's 1982. And then I'm like, oh my God, that's 40 years ago. And then I end up finding a documentary that sucks me in because it's based on a true story, is on the designer Mr. Halston from the 60s and 70s. He was famous for designing hats for Jackie O, and I kind of got sucked into that. And I don't enjoy miniseries very often, guys, but that was actually a pretty good one for me. So I'll give that a one thumbs up. Won't go two, but if you're looking for something to watch.
Which one again?
It was called Halston. He was a famous designer through the 60s and 70s. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. He kind of, if you want to sum up his personality and his lifestyle, think of Freddie Mercury designing clothes. And then maybe that excites you.
Very flamboyant.
Yeah, very much so. Very eccentric. Man, if this guy smokes this much or did smoke this much in real life, assumption is that lung cancer grabbed a hold of him, JR, because there's not a second that doesn't have a dart fired up and just friggin' burning him down.
Yeah. One off the other, off the other.
Oh,
the
just other. Incredible. Yeah. Not a single scene in the movie. And I've always thought, you know what, smoking, never been a fan of it. My mom, unfortunately, did that back in the day. But that person that wakes up and fires up a dart, and I know you got if your mouth tastes as bad as mine in the morning and you're wanting to fire up a dart and a coffee, then you got issues.
There you go. Now you're 2 hours and 49 minutes into the show. You're now you're Pashon this morning because and the P being silent because you're on Team Pfizer. after the big shot yesterday. How's the shoulder was or I was hurting at the start of the show. Any resolution?
No, the shoulder's still sore. But I have to admit, in the weeks here of kind of different things have changed in my life, JR, along with being on medication, where my body and mind is at, what I did find quite simply, and I will blame you, as we entered into that debate on Zoom,
yes,
my legs started shaking. And I actually started to feel some anxiety. So I've realized I'm going to meet with my therapist a week from Wednesday. I'm going to have to discuss this. It was kind of funny. And I was almost feeling bad at the end. And I'm like, as far as a part of it, no, I last night I actually slept really good. And other than the arm being a bit sore, and I said to Mir, I don't even want to read about what, goes on. Because I was really kind of worried about it. I didn't want to take any time off. And I'm thinking, oh my God, please don't wake up at 4:30 and be feeling. And I actually felt pretty good. I was that arm part that you've touched on. I was kind of it's kind of funny because it's like this. I don't know in radius, probably 3 or 4 inch spot feels like you got a good old whack on the arm.
The word on the vaccines is that Pfizer and Moderna, you get a reaction on your second shot where you don't feel that great. Team AZ, it's on your first shot. And I know for me, and Hammer, you are the same, right? Team AZ after the first shot. Didn't feel very good.
Okay. It wasn't bad. It was flu-like symptoms.
It was your body telling you, yeah, I got something going on here, which is at the end of the day what you'd like. Yeah.
Full body chills.
Yes, exactly.
Well, and it was funny when I sat down, JR, the lady said, when's the last time you had a vaccine? I said, I think 5 years old. And she's like, you haven't had a tetanus shot? I'm like, no, I lived in the United States. Am I supposed to get that? You're supposed to get it every 10 years. So she was kind of looking at me a little perplexed. I
don't know that I've had one in the last, I don't know how many years either.
Have you had anything else done in the last whatever?
In terms of shots?
I had chicken pox one when I was.
I had a thing for shingles. I got a shot for shingles.
Okay. Which by all accounts for what people have gone through, I'm assuming that's a good one, right?
Yeah.
And I've never done the flu shot either. So I've never, this is all kind of foreign territory as I'm doing all this. And
So for everybody, if you missed the news this morning, if you're 30 plus now, you can register on the provincial portal for getting your shot. That's as of this morning at 8 o'clock, and I'm assuming that just got snowed under.
Yeah.
And then next Monday, it's for everybody 18 plus. So we're moving rapidly. Now, just because you can register doesn't mean you're getting the shot right away. We're, of course, hopeful of that. But I think one of the encouraging things in all this is that there appears to be a very good uptake percentage-wise of population of people that want to do it.
Yeah.
And again, I'm watching from afar what's going on down in the U.S., and they were way ahead of us in terms of vaccinations. We're catching up real quick, and the attitude in the states, it looks like you have to get to a certain number, right? Yeah. They said for herd immunity of between 70, 75, or 80%, whatever the number is. There's some concern they may not get there. And then you open the door to possibly not getting, herd immunity, which is what will eventually eradicate the virus in this case, in your country. So I don't think we're going to, it doesn't seem like we're going to face that issue, here in Canada. It's just been, how many vaccine selfies have you seen from people on social media? Like everybody now, I got my vaccine. I'm so happy. So
I was to the point that I asked the nurse, are you going to take my picture? I assume the nurses are taking it. She said, we're not allowed to take pictures. I'm like, well, everybody seems to have a picture. So Mira ended up taking eyes. We got our vaccine. We move on. And it really raises an interesting point, JR. And I'm not jealous at all, but I'm watching what's going on in the United States. I'm watching the sporting events. Like I'm watching Florida yesterday, and whether people have a mask on, most times it's not worn properly, it's no effect. And what was pointed out yesterday by Pierre, they went through a listing, and I thought it was St. Louis originally that had 9,000, which was the most allowed in the United States, because they went through all the American teams. I find it incredible that in Vegas is kind of, hey, we're going to look the other way. Do you know what I mean? Like in Canada, do you imagine if they announced at the CTC you can have 7,500 people? Do you imagine if they had 7,501? Do you know what I mean?
We love our rules
in
Canada.
Well, but I don't mind that. Like, it's really interesting. As you said, there are lots of people in Vegas yesterday or anywhere that either haven't been vaccinated, didn't want the vaccine, maybe carrying it, And at the same time, it's just like, whatever, you know what? We're just not even, we're going to pretend it's not there anymore. So I'm excited, as you said, that as a society, maybe we take the long game, but at the end of the day, hopefully by the fall, we're better for it. And it really does return. And want to see pictures like we saw in New Zealand, where all of a sudden 50,000 people are out enjoying a concert and enjoying life without a mask.
And some breaking news at CTV Ottawa on their Twitter account. Did you see that as well? Oh, then I'll let you say it.
No, you say it. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, all adults are eligible as of Tuesday.
Tomorrow.
To sign up for vaccine appointments.
What just literally said 3 minutes ago, that it's 18 plus as of next Monday. They just announced in the last 10 minutes it's now as of tomorrow.
Oh, awesome.
The vaccine supply is plentiful enough that everybody can get their first, or at least sign up for their first shot if you're 18 years of age or older as of 8 a.m. tomorrow.
Yeah, I think on Friday they announced whatever one, I lose, but 4.5 million new doses or whatever was coming in. So hopefully we're ramping up. And as I said, as we get towards summer and just a good feeling, I'm not pretending Jairus has gone away. But as you said, just knowing our society and respectful we are, majority wanted to take it, that I'm praying for fall, that we're back at the CTC and back enjoying, whether it's a football game for a late fall CFL or maybe a Sen season at some point.
On the woman in the window, unsigned rights. Jair, totally agree with your rating on that movie. That's Time I'll Never Get Back.
Yeah.
I love those reviews of you know what? 2 hours back.
Again, without giving it away, there's a good twist. There's a good twist in the story, but then it ends like, it's like so many movies, it just ends in a stupid way. And it's kind of like, okay, we've reached our hour and 45 minutes. How are we going to end this in a stupid way? Oh, I got an idea. Here's a stupid way. Nice. Let's do that. Let's sign that up. That's a good stupid way to end this movie. Like, movies never end logically. Like, they don't end in believable ways.
I don't think they're aiming to go with a stupid ending. I don't think that's their purpose.
And it drives my wife crazy. I look at everything with logic. And I say to her all the time, I said, you're not looking at this logically. And I can never seem to convince her of looking at things in my way.
Probably gets annoyed at that.
Yeah, exactly. Very much so. But I need some logic to end my, just once in a while. Not all the time. I understand we're supposed to suspend our belief when we go to movies and watch movies or whatever. Understand that. But when you end the movie, which is already so-so, and you end it, it's like, okay, let's draw something out of a hat. Okay, that's the way we're going to end the movie. That's what it appeared like this.
Yeah, and another sleeper movie for the people out there listening that think they've tuned into the wrong station. Juno is another movie I watch. I'm going to give two thumbs up to that. It's actually from 2007.
I was going to say, that's Ellen Page?
Yeah, is that what it is, Jerry? Yes. It was actually, I like
a new name now.
I like that. Now, also a couple of things. We've all gone down the rabbit hole of terrible movies during COVID. If you haven't, you've lied, because I've run out of things to watch. But in the case of, as you said, the movies and where we're at, do you not watch now, JR, at your vintage, which we're very close in age, and start to understand that if it's not a remake of the movie that we've done, that we've watched, like Point Blank, I'm like, we got to watch the original. Like every movie kind of...
there are no new ideas.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I feel like maybe they're trying to twist just a little bit at the end, because everything is based on the same thing, right? It's all been redone in our lifetime. Just takes on a little bit of a different form, different character, as you said, trying to make the endings. They're not as afraid. In my lifetime, everything was Walt Disney, right? Everything had to be happy at the end, right? Other than Old Yeller, everything had to be a good ending. And now we don't necessarily have to have that all the time.
Old Yeller.
I know. That's really old. It made me cry. Well, you know what I'm saying, JR. That was
anything from the last 60 years.
No, because that was a deep wound. Like even through my therapy, Old Yeller's come up. It really was. That was one of the
Trying to move on.
I know. Am I more updated if I say the movie The Champ?
Well, you're into the 80s, I think.
No. Oh, God, no. No, that's Ricky Schroeder, well on 70s.
Well, you did bring up First Blood. That's 80s right 82. There, too. I mean, 82. Juno, that's not bad. You're getting close.
I know.
Anyway. All right, let's take a break. 8:58. We'll get a top-of-the-hour news update, run down all the scoreboard details, and come back with a full hour. We'll get into the playoffs and a look ahead to what's going to go on tonight and later on this week. The decision by Montreal to send Price and Gallagher to Laval to play in the game tonight. The Leafs are going to go with Jack Campbell in game one, which is interesting as well. So we'll get into that, and we'll hear more from Pierre Dorion. His A media availability here on TSN 1200 coming up last Friday. If you missed it, by the way, you can find it on our website at tsn1200.ca. We'll get into more than the comments on Artem Zub from Pierre Dorion from Friday as well. So we got a lot straight ahead of us. And code word number two on the day is coming up before 10 o'clock as well. This, of course, to get involved in our Sens Jersey Monday contest. So that is coming up straight on ahead in the 9 o'clock hour right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200.